specifically, we are up to Se'if Ches. What is this? Se'if Ches. Okay? Chet Ches. You can say it as you choose. As you wish. The Pisrei Choshen says, Bo lefanav kama anashim lilvos. Ve'echad mehem tzarech schum gadol. What if a bunch of people come to you for loans, and we're still within the section in which he's dealing with loans as a form of tzedakah, as opposed to just the general issues of lending, which he'll get to eventually. But what if a group of people come to you, they all want loans, but one of them needs a really large sum, such that you have a choice. You could help this one person, and then you're out of luck on helping the rest. Or you could help five or six other people with smaller amounts and leave him high and dry. Those are your options. Sheim yal velo, lo yuchal lo halvos la'acherim, such that if you were to lend to him, you could not lend to others. Mutav l'chaleika halvaos l'kama anoshim. So he says, it's better to distribute the loans to many individuals, rather than give to one person in a big way. Why is that pashut?
Multiple mitzvahs.
Right.
That's so now this guy, so this individual should suffer so that I get more mitzvahs?
What?
This individual suffers. Not only that, the argument I can make in response is, maybe it's a bigger mitzvah when I lend somebody $100,000 as opposed to if I lend five people $10,000. In other words, I'm not going to be able to pray. No, that's true. No, I don't want to make it 20. I want the result of lending all the little guys to not equal the big guy's loan. But you won't be able to provide him with what he needed now. That's my point. In other words, what about where the sum that I will end up lending will actually be less? Or the assistance that I'm giving is less? Because when I give them that small amount, that's not the same thing as when I give somebody the amount he needs to get his business going, right? Or to live for a year, or whatever it is, to pay off all his gargantuan debts. So it's not so simple and straightforward. We need to understand why this is so. Take a look, please, at footnote Chav Gimel. Sivkan Chav Gimel. At the bottom of the page. He quotes the Avas Chesed by Abba Chavetz Chaim, Sif Yudalid. Ukmosha Amru Ba'avos Hakol Lefi Rov HaMa'aseh. He bases it on the Mishnah Pirkei Avos, which indeed says that all that a person does is according to the great deeds or the greatness of the deeds in terms of number. Rove is multiplicity, really, of his deeds. Meaning, the more deeds you do, the better off you are. Why? So if you look at the sheet that I gave you, the added sheet, Source Aleph, and I think this is what Murray was thinking about in terms of the Rambam makes an important comment about Chesed. He says, Hamalos lo yusagu lefi shir godel hamaaseh, ela lefi rov mispar hamaaseh. He says, levels. And when he says levels, what he means is growth. Growth is not achieved based on one gigantic deed. It's not based on the magnitude of your action, but rather based on the number of actions that you perform. In other words, the more times I do the mitzvah, the more I am influenced, as opposed to doing the mitzvah once, but in a grand way. So, to translate it out of chesed, you take someone who goes to learn, and he says, I have a choice. I could sit down at one sitting and learn for 4 hours, and that's going to be my learning for the week. Or, I could do an hour a day for 4 days. The Rambam will say, you're better off doing an hour a day for 4 days. Because of the effect that it's going to have on you when each day you sit down and you establish time to learn, that's actually going to have a greater impact on the person than doing the 4 hour at a shot and then saying nothing, you know, for the next week. He continues, Mashal Azeh, he gives you a parable, Sha'adam, or comparison really, Sha'adam Yitain Lamisha Ra'uai Elef Dinar, Bipama Chazulish Echod, Lotusa Glo Malas Hanedibus Bezeh Maaseho Echod Hagadol, Kemosha Tusag Lamisha Yisnadev Elef Pamim Be Elef Dinar, Yitain Kol Dinar Mehem Altsad Hanedibus. He said, Nedibut if you like, he says, if a person were to give 1,000 dinar to a worthy recipient, but just once, to one party, he would not be influenced in terms of developing generosity through that single great deed the way that he would be if he gave 1,000 gifts of $1 each. Now, the recipients may not be happy. Right? The recipients may not be happy. Certainly, the guy who is losing out on the 1,000, the one who would have had the 1,000 is unhappy, and everybody else is sitting there thinking, he gave me a dollar. You know, it's the Rebbe line. He gave me a dollar. So from that perspective, it's not necessarily as beneficial. But the Rambam is very big on the idea that there are benefits I am meant to gain from mitzvahs, and those benefits are so great that they will shape the way I do the mitzvah. That's really what he's telling me. The benefit of learning generosity by writing a check 1,000 times is more important than the assistance that the individual recipient is going to get.
Isn't there an assumption that this world is beyond a level which makes it significant?
Yeah, so maybe you have to make sure that each individual gift has significance, but he's willing to tell you 1 dinar for 1,000, you know, for each of 1,000 people.
I understand that 1 dinar is a decent amount.
Maybe. A dinner is 6 shekel. $2. Well, no, less than that. $1.25. It depends on how, you know, the value of silver and so on. But maybe. Maybe it has to reach a minimum threshold. That, you can make that argument. So that's the basis that he begins with. Then he's going to say, not so fast. He starts out with that quote back in the Pesach Hoshen of Hakol Avirov HaMaaseh, and then after the parentheses he says Ella in Cain, unless right after the parentheses, 3 lines up from the bottom, Ella in Cain ha'echad who begeder v'hechazak tabo shalo yismotate, unless one of the possible recipients is reaching the point of collapse, what he requires, as the pasuk says, for you to strengthen him. You have to grab hold and strengthen this person. If one of them is dying and needs food, you can't say, well, I'm sorry. You know, I need to make sure that I develop my generosity, so I'm going to give you 1 fig. And each person's going to get 1 fig, and you'll have to just, you know, get more help somewhere else. No. If one has a particular urgent need, then you break this rule and you help.
But then you're verging on stuff. It doesn't sound like halva anymore.
But that's okay, because we're viewing halva as tzedakah. Right.
Okay.
We're viewing that, and that's what I said at the outset, that this chapter, he's looking at loans as tzedakah, for sure. Yeah.
Already there is no...
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I'd say use pikuach nefesh exactly, not literally starving to death, shloyis motet, is that his financial affairs are about to collapse. But he continues. V'ayim asher kasavti b'sefer tzedakah u'mishpat, see what I wrote in my other book, tzedakah u'mishpat. Based on this, it appears that also when it comes to lending, if for one recipient, the loan that you would give him would be what he is lacking in order to be brought back up to his normal standard of living, which is the Torah's basic definition of fulfilling tzedakah, is giving a person back his normal standard of living. But in distributing to many people, each one's only going to get a small amount. Then you can make a competing argument. And you could say that it is better for a person to fulfill one mitzvah in its fullest way by restoring a person to full status, as opposed to fulfilling the mitzvah in an incomplete way for all these other people. In other words, he's introducing a new criteria for me. In addition to the criteria of, am I learning generosity this way? And in addition to the criteria of, is somebody on the verge of collapse? He's now introducing a third point, which is quality of mitzvah. maybe there really is a categorical difference between a mitzvah of aid, which brings a person back fully to their standard of living, and other forms of tzedakah, other levels of tzedakah, and that first one is so great that that would actually have primacy. You follow? That's the suggestion that he's making. So we've gotten three things that we have to consider when we're making our micro-loan versus mega-loan decision. Right? The effect it'll have on me. Is anyone on the verge of collapse? And is any of these opportunities really a unique mitzvah such that it really should be put first? Because it's so far above the quality of the others.
Is anyone coming to you, or voicing on anything? If you have the capacity to make anyone whole, it's be back to the same square one again.
And that's really rare. In other words, today we generally work with the assumption that you're not able to do this. Because, generally speaking, the people who come around who have, you know, who are making their requests are so needy that to try to bring them up to what would be considered sort of the normal standard of living that they were used to before they became broke is really... it's not like 2,000 years ago where your standard of living was, you know, basically binary. You have food or you don't have food. Right? Maybe you had an animal or non-animal, and it's rare. The Gemara talks about someone who used to have runners who would run before their chariot and so on, and Rava fulfilling that mitzvah of giving them the chicken. Like you have cases like that in the Gemara, but that's not the norm. The norm was a much simpler concept. Whereas today, you know, what was the person's standard of living? Well, before the market crashed and they lost their investments, and then they had to marry off, you know, three or four children or however many number, they had fill in the blank. You're going to restore that to them. By what means is someone going to be able to do that? And generally speaking, we don't do that with our tzedakah. That's just the nature of things. Okay. So that was point number one, microloans versus megaloans. We now move back into the top of the page, Seif Tes. The question of borrowing in order to lend. If I really have a mitzvah of lending, so maybe, just like other mitzvahs, I have to, so to speak, spend on it. Maybe I should, in the same way that to get a lulav, there's a certain amount I have to spend, so maybe I should be willing to spend in order to get money, which I will then turn around and lend to other people. Why don't I look at it like every mitzvah? So take a look at Tess. He says, Eino chayav lahalvos ela kishiyesh lo ma'os mizumanim. He says, one is not obligated to lend unless he has money at the ready. Ve'eino chayav lilvos me'acherim. He is not obligated to borrow from others. Kedei lahalvos, in order to lend out. Aval, however, if he has money that he's given other people to watch, he deposited in the bank, for example, he would be obligated to work to bring that money back in order to lend it out to a person in need. In footnote Chaf Hey, he mentions specifically the bank case. But he says, I'm not obligated to borrow. That's sort of the limit. Why not? Take a look at Chaf Dalet, please. The first line in the footnotes. Quotes the Abbas Chesed of the Chafetz Chaim, Perek Aleph, Sif Yud Beis. That's his source for saying that you do not have an obligation to take out a loan. V'siyem, and the Chafetz Chaim concludes, Imlo mitzad midas ha-chesed be'alma. He says, you're not obligated to take out a loan other than perhaps as a function of general generosity. In other words, it's chesed. If you will take out a loan in order to lend to somebody else, that's wonderful. That's an act of chesed. Ubenisiva chesed sham, the commentary to Abbas chesed, mitzadeh lomar, she'im al yidei ha-halva'ah u-machzikenu shalo yismotet, she'esh bazeh mishum ve'chazak tabo. Esher she'tzarech lovos me'achirim. He says, in the event that it's full tzedakah, what you're doing, such that, bless you, such that someone's about to collapse financially, and now you're going to enable them not to, maybe you do, in fact, need to borrow from somebody else, And then he continues to say, "Upsicha siv gimel nesivah chesed sham sivka and hey kasav sheim ha'halva'ahi kidei lahatzil misakana." If the purpose of taking out the loan is to save someone from danger, right? Imagine like a Pinyon Shmuyim case, someone's been taken captive, something along those lines. Who bichlal losa? I'm sorry, this isn't the loan you're taking out. This is the loan you're extending, is to save someone from danger. Who bichlal losa amod al dam reyecha? Then indeed, it's like the mitzvah of don't stand by the blood of your brother. Hey, there should be a program about that. Sorry, it's just a joke. They do not stand by the blood of your brother. Shebimakom lav tzarech gam lilvos me'achirim kidei la'alvos lo. Since you have a prohibition here of don't stand by, therefore you will be required to actually borrow to avoid violating the losase. That is actually, to me, a huge novelty. Think about the gravity of what he just said. The gravity of what he just said is, if I don't have the ability to help somebody else, the Torah says, don't stand by. Even though right now I don't have the means with me, I am obligated to borrow money so that I will have the means to avoid violating this prohibition. Apply that to other cases, right? Let's say the lo samod al dam reyecha issue is not one of money. Let's say it's health, right? Am I obligated to go learn CPR so that if somebody collapses, I will be able to take care of them, to revive them? What would you say? It seems yes. Why? Yeah, but I don't know CPR right now. I am trained in CPR, so don't worry, we're all safe.
It's a positive obligation. It's a positive obligation to go out and make sure that you're in a position to help your brother. So if it is with money, it must be the same.
So am I obligated to go to medical school so I can become a doctor and help people in need?
I'm sure the answer is no, but not based on this.
Well, that's the question. In other words, to tell you the truth, based on all the various reasons why one is supposed to help others, and based on the extent of this obligation of not standing by and so on, I would have assumed, yeah, there's an obligation for all of us to learn medical care. I asked Rav Schachter this question. Sorry. He's not in front of me right now. That's true. So I asked Rav Schachter this question a few years ago. And he said, no, there's no obligation. We don't take it that far that you have to go to medical school. And someone showed me a video of Rabbi Dean Steinsaltz actually addressing this also. And also, Steinsaltz says, no, you're not obligated to go to medical school for it. But frankly, I don't know where you draw the line. I am obligated to take out a loan in order to provide financial assistance to someone who's collapsing. Murray says, I'm obligated to learn CPR in order to be able to revive people if they collapse. So it appears. So it's just a matter of magnitude of investment in learning CPR versus going to medical school. Is that what it's about? Because going to medical school requires so much more of my time and money and effort than going to a one-day session on how to revive people? Maybe. But I don't think it's simple. And that's what he's begging us. He's begging us to ask this question here. Sorry.
You're talking about the Lama Echa imminent. If it's imminent, not preventive.
If it's imminent, not preventive.
Like if it happens, I can't.
So you're saying it's only if there's a situation right in front of me, that's where we will say this. Maybe.
Why would it expand to preventing future cases, whatever happens?
Right, we do have a principle that pikuach nefesh, when we want to use the principle of saving a life to override some other concerns, the Noda B'Yehuda is the one who codified this idea that you require somebody lifaneinu, someone in front of us who needs help, and that otherwise pikuach nefesh doesn't carry the same weight. He wrote about this in the autopsy discussion. The question of saying, if I could do an autopsy on somebody and thereby learn something that would be medically significant, which could lead to being able to save somebody else's life, do I say, well, saving a life overrides the concern for degrading the body and not benefiting from a body, all the different issues that are potentially involved in autopsy? Or do I say, no, there's no one right now in front of me waiting for an operation who we're now going to save because of what we're learning from this body? He argues that if there isn't somebody imminently who's going to benefit, then then you don't say it's pikuach nefesh. Others, surprise, surprise, disagree. At least in scope, if not in concept. But I think these are all interesting issues that are offshoots of this piece.
In a way, what it is with the money is it's like you have talent, and you should go use it. So clearly people are coming to you to borrow money from you because you have in the past, you have talent
right. In
that regard. So it's like people say, oh, you have a talent in X, you should go develop it. It's like, you know,
yeah. Sin
not to... It's funny, it's actually addressing this very topic in a kind of a roundabout, you know, popular way,
right. You
want to say. And there may be something to it. They're going to them. They're not coming to me. Because
maybe.
It's well known and
well, but the next question is, what if they didn't come to me, but I know they're in need? Do they have to come to me in order for me to be the one on the spot, or am I on the spot by dint of my awareness of the problem? I'm not going to go into this in greater depth now. I'm raising the question because I think it's an important question to ask, but this is a chabura on Pisvechoshen rather than a shir. If this is a shir, then I'd be obligated to now explore this to the end, and then we would never get to discuss anything else. Okay, let's look at Seif Yud. Opportunity costs. Yesh lo maos mizumanim. What if somebody has money at the ready? He could lend. Elisha yodea shebekarov yavo lo esek laharviach letzorech parnasoso. But he knows that he's going to have an opportunity to invest that money in his business in short order. Eino tzorech lahalvosam. He need not lend that money out. Imal yedekach lo yuchal lasas haesek. If lending it out would prevent him from engaging in his business, my obligation to lend is not going to override my need for parnasa. Now, this is predictable, but take a look at footnote Chav Zayin, where he says, but not so fast. Chav Zayin, he writes, well, this piece comes from the Avas Chesed of the Chavetz Chaim. This Siyem, and the Chavetz Chaim concluded, She'em hu ashir, v'yesh lo maos b'telos, if a person is wealthy and he has money that's not in use, v'adai chayev l'halvosam, then he certainly is obligated to lend them. Even if that means he won't be able to use that in his investments, dim locating sheer ladavar, because otherwise there's really no limit to this. There's no threshold. Meaning, shekol ashir, shekol hon lo yaspik lo, v'ya potur lo olam mitzvahs im kesef talveh. Because ultimately, everybody's going to say, what I have is not enough for me. Right? There's always a need for more, because as we get more money, we spend more money on various things. We elevate our standard of living. So there's no point at which you say, I have enough. And he's going to say, and I'm looking to invest what I have. And I'll never end up lending anybody anything. So he says there has to be at some point a threshold. Ultimately, when you're dealing with this, nothing's going to abase him. The person who wants the loan is not able to take you to court and say, hey, he didn't lend to me. This is This is what you have to now resolve with Hashem. But what he's telling you is, this is what you have to think about. When you say, opportunity cost is a factor, I learned it in Pisnei Choshen, and that I am not required to give up my financial opportunities in order to lend money out, you have to ask yourself, are these opportunities I really need? Or can I say, you know what, forgiving this opportunity that I had to get more money so I could go on another vacation, maybe I should give that up in order to be able to lend. That's the idea that he's presenting here. Clear? Okay. Yud Aleph. Zooming along. They lending out other people's money. This is not talking about an investment banker. The Yesh Biyado Maos Pikadon Michel Acherim. What if someone else gave you money to watch? Yesh Omrim Sha'av Abisha Yesh Lo Rishus Lish Damesh Bem Le'atzmo Eino Chayav La'alvosam. Presuming an arrangement in which you are licensed to use it for yourself. The person says to you, for whatever reason, I want to keep my money with you. You can use it. When I come back for it, I'm going to want you to pay me back. So since it is available for your use, one might have argued that you are obligated to lend it out to others. And he says, no, that's not your obligation. It's not really yours. It's staying with you for the time being, but it's not really yours. Got it? Okay. Moving to Yud Beis. There's a nice discussion in footnote Chav Ches, but I decided to jump that one. Yud Beis. This is always a very interesting question. Baal lefanav Yisrael va'akum lilvos. What if a Jew comes to you wanting a loan, and a non-Jew comes to you wanting a loan? What's the difference from your perspective in terms of the way you look at it? There's a mitzvah of chesed for everybody. There may be a greater tzedakah threshold with the Jew of giving him back his former life, his former standard of living, as opposed to with the Yaakov, where it's just help him out in general, make sure he survives. It's the difference between family and non-family. But there's a mitzvah of helping both. The difference is that when I lend to a Jew, it has to be without interest. If I lend to the person who's not Jewish, right, then I can charge interest. It's almost a business deal. So therefore, he says, what if the Jew and the non-Jew come to you to borrow, and you personally would rather lend to the non-Jew because you can get interest out of that? Chayav lahakdim ha-Yisrael. He says it doesn't work that way. The Jew is first. Even though he would have given you interest on the loan.
And I think the one before, I have a business report right here in front of me.
Yeah.
Give me that.
Right.
I'm not personally obligated to hold it.
Right. So he seems to be telling you that, well, I don't need to say he. Instead, let's take a look, first of all, at footnote Chav Tes. In footnote Chav Tes, he writes, it's at the bottom, four lines up from the bottom. Kasa v'avas chesed, dahainu davka kishabau shneim bevas achas. This assumes they came to you simultaneously. But if the non-Jew came to you first, mutar lahalvos lo, then you're allowed to lend to him. Elim ken yodeya bevadai shebekarov yavo Yisrael lilvos, unless you know a Jew is coming imminently. Shaz yeshali himana milahalvos la'akum, in which case you should not extend that loan. That's number one. In terms of the non-Jew and the ribbis, take a look on your added sheets that I gave you. Source base. It's a Gemara Bava Metzia. Rabbi Vitzia says, Tani Rabbi Yosef, Im kesef talve es ani, es he'ani imach. The Pasuk says, right? Rabbi Yosef says, the Pasuk says, if you will lend to my nation, to the needy person, with you. So ami is first. Ami v'nachri, if it's my nation or someone who is a stranger, ami kodem, then my nation comes first. Ani v'ashir, if it's a pauper versus a wealthy person, the Pasuk said ani. So ani kodem, the pauper comes first, and then the wealthy person who wants to borrow money to be able to invest. What if it is a relative of yours versus if it is somebody from the city? So the relative comes first. Your city or someone else's city, your city comes first. That's the price of Rabbi Yosef. It's a concept that's familiar to us from Tzedakah also. They then quote from Rabbi Yosef's price. He said, Ami benochri, ami kodem. My nation or the Nachri, my nation comes first. So the Gemara says, Pshita, isn't that obvious? Amar of Nachman, Amar li Huna. Rav Nachman says, Rav Huna told me, Lo nitzricha da'afilu l'nachri beribis uli Yisrael b'chinam. The reason why you need to say it is because of the case where you'll get ribis from the non-Jew. As Dan said, we've already said opportunity costs can cause you to cancel a loan. That doesn't work in terms of lending with interest to the Nachri. He's not willing to view that as like the other investments, Xeros HaKosov, simply because of the Pasuk. That's the that's what we are drawing on here.
Somewhat of less
Maybe it's really not viewed as a legitimate business. That could be. It is worth noting, if you look at the footnote, interesting, in footnote Lamed Aleph, in the Pisnei Choshen, he first refers you to the Gemara that I just brought you, and he says it's brought in the Shulchan Aruch HaRav. Do you see it? Ve'viu b'Shulchan Aruch Harav, it's brought in the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch. U'be'avas Chesed Shem. U'b'Shar Mishpat, and in the work Shar Mishpat, Tama, he expressed surprise. Ala Rambam b'Shulchan Aruch she'shmitu halachazu. The Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch do not mention this law that if you can lend to the Jew and you can lend to the Aklan with Ribbis, the Jew precedes. Not so clear cut. They don't mention this as a halacha. Maybe they view it, in fact, as like any other investment. Could be. Sorry? So actually, that changes. Okay, so that changes the loan that you are giving him from tzedakah to investment. Okay. Oh, no, but the question he has is, why didn't the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch say that if I have a choice between lending to a Jew or lending to an Akum with Ribbis, the loan to the Jew comes first? They omit that law. Oh, but they don't mention it in Choshen Mishpat, or it's not there at all. Yeah, that's the catch. I know
what is the purpose of the Akum wants the money? If he needs it because he's so poor, then it's a moral hazard. If he needs it because he wants money to invest in increase his business.
But if that were true, then we would have to say that. We would need to mention it. You can't get away without saying it. Without the Rambam, if the Rambam believes in this case you do X, in this case you do Y, then he has to say so. He can't just say, well, I'm not going to discuss the whole topic. That's not the Rambam. Certainly not the Shulchan Aruch. The answer may well be that it's because they take the view that it's an investment. It's not a chesed. It's an investment like the other investments we mentioned before. It actually does take primacy over the loan that you're going to extend. Maybe that's really their view. I don't know. The other piece to see, though, is in the rest of this Hischei Choshen note at the top of the page where he says, Ella. All right? After telling us that the loan to the Yisrael precedes the loan with Ribbis to the Akum, he then says, Ella, other than, but, Shenechleku ha'acharonim, im gam berevach merubach chayev lahafzid kidei lahakdim ha'Yisrael. They debate whether, if there is a large profit to be gained in this loan that you're going to extend, would you really be obligated to lose that in order to put the Jew first? So there you see the beginning of a hedge on this. Take a look at footnote Lamed Beis, please. Chesed Shem Siv Hey Sidi Avas Chesed Unisiva Chesed Zikon Tes from Megillas Esther Shekasav Demi De Itzrich Kra. Okay, you know what? I'm going to explain this outside before I explain it inside. When the Torah talks about not eating a nevela, right, an animal of a kosher species that dies without being shechted, is called a nevela. So if I have a cow and the cow one day just drops dead, or someone was doing the shechita and they messed up the shechita, that animal is now called a nevela. It's not kosher. What do I do with it? So the Torah says, La gera shepish arecha titinena va'achala, o machor l'nochri. Give it to the ger toshav. A ger toshav is a non-Jew who agrees to keep the 7 Noahide laws. So give it to him and he will eat it, because kashrus is not one of his laws. Or sell it to the Nochri, to some stranger, some non-Jew out there. Either option is presented. Okay, that's the statement. And the Gemara asks, why did you present this way in the Torah, in this order? Is it because I have precedence for the Ger Toshav, like it's better to give it away as a gift to the Ger Toshav to support him, rather than to sell it to the other fellow? Like, what's this about? So that's what they're building on here. Demi de istrich kra lahakdim li Yisrael b'chinam v'lo yalfinan min nevela shetzarech lahakdim li Yisrael b'nesina mila ger b'mechira shmamina shafilu b'davar meruba tzarech lahakdim l'inyan halva'a. He says, the Nisibah Chesed quotes the Megillas Esther saying that from the fact fact that one of the things that we do deduce there is that if I have a choice between giving something to a Yisrael or selling it to a Geritosha, I have to give to the Yisrael first. That's something that I know in general, that I learned from a pasuk, separate from our discussion about the Nevela. I have that principle. And I don't say, well, let's learn it from the Nevela. Why don't I say to learn it from there? Shmami no, we see. Shafilu bedavar maruba sarach lahaktim le'enyan halva. Mash'enke minevela sheno ela davar muat. What he says is, there is a rule that suggests, not suggests, there's a rule that states that if I have a choice between giving to a Yisrael or selling it to a non-Yisrael, then I am supposed to give it to the Yisrael first. That's what I'm supposed to do. They learn that from a pasuk, beyond the scope of what we've said here. They have a question. Megillas Esther wants to know. I didn't need a separate pasuk to teach me that. From the fact that regarding Nevela, you said, give it to the Geritosha before selling it to someone who doesn't keep the seven Noachai laws, I should have been able to deduce that if it's a choice between Yisrael and Geritosha, or Yisrael in general Nachri, you give it to the Yisrael before selling it to the person who's not a Yisrael. Right? Why didn't I just bump it up one? If you know that giving to a Geritosha precedes giving to a not selling it to a Nachri, then giving to a Yisrael precedes selling to a Geritosha.
I don't know.
Why not?
Because the Geritosha is part of the Israel. He does what's required of him.
Alright, so let's say not Geritosha. Let's leave the Geritosha out of the equation. You could deduce, if you know that you have to sell it, if you know that you have to give it away to a Geritosha before selling it to a Nachri, so then obviously you have to give to a Yisrael before selling to a Nachri. Let's just say that. Don't confuse matters with a Geritosha. Why isn't that obvious to us? And yet, they have a special pasuk. So the Megillas Esther says the reason why is because if you had learned from Nevela, the argument could go. And Nevela isn't worth all that much. Right? Kosher meat is worth a lot because there's very little meat in relative to the demand for it. Non-kosher meat, there's loads of that on the market. It's not worth that much. It's worth something, clearly, or they wouldn't be in the business, but it's not worth all that much. So if I had deduced it from there, I would have said, when you're dealing with small amounts, you have to be mochel, you have to forgive it. Give it to the Jew and don't sell it to the Avi. That's what I would have learned from Nevela, because Nevela is small. From the fact that I have a special pasuk that says to me, give it to the Jew, don't sell to the Nachri, that tells me, even if you're dealing with large sums, nonetheless, you have to give it up. Rather than sell, you have to give it away. That's the idea. Take a look at source number 3. The Bnei Yoshua says this. The Bnei Yoshua on that Gemara in Bava Metzia, which said that your ani comes first and it's Yisrael before Nachri and so on. He says, Vikasha, this is difficult. The Akati Maikam Ashbalan, what is it teaching us? This lesson of the precedence for each level of a loan. Da afilu beger tosha varinan, dinasina de ger, kodem lamachira da akum. Even when you're dealing with a ger tosha, we say, that giving it to the ger comes before selling it to the akum. Right? That's the principle. That giving it to the ger tosha is first regarding the veil. The yalif la rabbi Yehuda mikra beperakal shah. Rabbi Yehuda learned it from Pasuk in the second paragraph of Sachim. Rabbi Meir sober dekranami lo tzarich disvarahu. Rabbi Meir says, I don't need a pasuk to teach me this because I know it logically already. Kevin de ger mitzvah lachayoso mashen kibinachri, because there's a special mitzvah of helping a ger toshav over and above, higher than the mitzvah of helping a general Noahide. If he's keeping the seven mitzvahs, there's a higher level of support that is due to him. So I don't even need the pasuk. But his point is not the debate about whether I need this pasuk or not. The point is, v'im kain, if so, kol shkein d'yesh lomar kain b'yisrael v'chinam didei kodol l'schar akum, then for sure I should say that lending to a Yisrael, for free, should come before lending to an Akum for payment, for Rivis. In lo shenomar, unless we're going to say the yesh lechalek, that there's room to distinguish. Desalka daita chamina, I would have thought to say. Didavka nevela dehefsed muadu amra tara dinasina deger kodim, specifically regarding a nevela, where it's only a small loss if you give it away. That's where the Torah says giving it to the ger toshav is better than selling it to somebody else. Masha'ekin beribis, as opposed to lending for interest. Should have said Maruba, that's potentially a big loss for you. Kamash Malan, Dafilu Achi Yisrael Kodem, and it's teaching me that nonetheless the Yisrael will come first. That's the idea. Are we clear? Even if it's a large amount that you could have gained, that's correct, the loan to the Yisrael is supposed to come first. That's the Pnei Yeshua. Now, that raises a question, which the Pnei Yeshua addresses. He quotes it in here. Because of, we are back in the Pisrei Choshen in footnote Lamed Beis. We are 10 or 11 lines down, the middle of the line, because of. And he wrote, I believe he's dealing with the Pnei Yeshua still, either that or the Megillas Esther, Shelo Amru, Shelo Kodem L'shal Kol Adam, Elav Ashavas Aveda. He says, the only time we say your property precedes that of others is when you're dealing with returning a lost object. Meaning, if I drop something in the river and it's running downstream, and then I see, as I'm looking for my item in the river, I see somebody else's, and I can only take one of them out. So I have the right to say, my property comes first. When it comes to returning lost objects, that's true. She'eino ela mishum hefsed mamon chaveiro, hefsed shelo kodein, because if it's my loss, or someone else's loss, so my loss comes first. Aval behalva, shehumi mitzvah tzedakah, but lending, that's your mitzvah. It's your mitzvah opportunity to give tzedakah. Pshita delo shayach lomar shelo kodein. So then obviously we're not going to say that your stuff is going to come before the other person's. If I were to say your property comes before someone else's, then no one would ever extend a loan, and no one would ever give tzedakah. Right? If you were going to imply that principle in general, so there would never be an opportunity to give anything away, because yours always comes first. Clearly that's not so. Why? Because we look at it as a mitzvah and say, this is mine too. Helping somebody else, even if I lose my own, is still mine. I'm still gaining. And therefore, it's not a weight of me losing by giving this away versus someone else losing. It's me gaining a mitzvah. That's the idea. He has more in the footnote, but I'm not going to push into the rest of it now. It's already late. But what we've come up with today is, number one, the micro loans are better than the mega loans, subject to three considerations. Number one, if there's someone who's going to collapse, right, who's financially needs it right now, one consideration was, how will it impact me? How will I become better? The second was the question of, is there someone who's near financial collapse? And then third was the question of, can I fulfill this mitzvah in its purest form with a mega loan by restoring someone to his normal standard of living? Borrowing in order to lend, we said, generally speaking, is not a requirement. Forgoing opportunity cost in your business is not a requirement. Lending out other people's money is not a good idea, even if it's to help somebody else, even though you have a right to use that money that was left with you, and so on. And then we said your priority between Yisrael and Akum, your priority is going to be with the Yisrael. Yes, we do believe in helping everybody. However, with family has that higher threshold, even if it means losing a ribis opportunity. Nonetheless, this is what one is expected to do, and even where the loss is a significant loss, not as low level as the nevela, even where it's a higher level loss. So that's a very interesting question. When you're dealing with a money manager, he's been hired specifically to do that. Right? You hire the money manager and say, I would like you to invest this on my behalf because I want to make a lot of money and I don't know how, but you do. Right? That's the idea. So if he takes that money and then uses it to lend to someone for tzedakah, that's probably malpractice. Right? I don't think he's licensed to do that. Where it gets interesting, though, I'll tell you where it gets interesting. You have a communal fund, let's say a UJA type of a situation, or a shul, for that matter, that has money that it invests. And they choose to invest it in Israel bonds. Because they say it's a solid investment, never defaulted, and so on. And there's a decent rate of return. But the donors, who have put their money into the fund, say, you know what, there are investments that are safer, they're just as safe, that will have a higher rate of return. Some municipal bond, invent a situation, it doesn't matter. Where you could be getting a better return. And your response to me is, yeah, but it's socially better, because as a Jew, I want to be able to help the state of Israel. And my response is, I'm an investor. I didn't give you the... I'm trying to support your enterprise, which I believe is good. Who gave you the right to now divert it to some other form of tzedakah? And that raises a whole host of questions. It's not just a question of ours. It's a question in the secular community. Ben and Jerry's had this whole thing with its investors, with the shareholders, because they wanted to use, they wanted to make business decisions that were they considered socially conscious. And the argument was, yeah, but does it benefit your shareholders? Your first obligation as a public company is to your shareholders. So do you have the right to say, I want to get water that's sourced from here and milk that's sourced from there and so on, if that's going to reduce your profits? And their argument was, which they wrote a book about, Ben and Jerry, they wrote a book on this, is that being a socially conscious business is actually better in the end for your business and for the environment in which you operate. And the argument is made also by the shuls and by the communal funds that putting it into the state of Israel, even if it means a lesser rate of return, is ultimately a better decision for them to make. But that's part of the discussion. If a money manager does that, yeah, I'd call that malpractice. I don't think he has the right to make that kind of a decision. Yeah. Okay, God willing, we'll pick up next week. Next week we are...